Personal Electronic Flight, A New Age May Be Dawning. I'm Paul Platt, and this is Aero News. Welcome into this Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. My guest is Scott Redmond, who is in San Francisco. Scott has a company called Personal Flight Systems, and he has recently been awarded a patent in human electronic flight. Scott, thanks for joining us today. Tell us, what is human electronic flight?
This is a technology that allows lift to occur without the need for a propeller, a jet, a balloon, or rockets. And it uses the manipulation of ions in a medium, such as air or water, to create that thrust.
Now, tell me a little bit about this, because I think that a lot of the science fiction writers have focused on using electronic propulsion in a manner that would work in a vacuum, things like opposing gravity, or this is actually still displacing air in a direction opposite the way you want to go. It's still Newton's laws of motion, right?
Part of it is, the reason it's resurfaced is recently someone dumped on YouTube some original government experimental video of the first generation aspect of the technology. So the movies have been proven to be real. There's some well-known people in those movies, and it's back from the 40s and 50s. And that's considered to be the first generation aspect of the technology. Interestingly, the second generation became worse, and it was due to unbudgeted, unsophisticated, off-the-cuff experiments by hobbyists and amateurs and people doing things in their college dorm rooms. So the technology got a bad name because it didn't work. It didn't work completely in the first gen. It worked worse in the second gen. And what we simply did is fix the problems and create a third-generation version of the technology with adequate resources.
Okay, now here's the part that interests me, is you have a patent on a technology that can be explained on paper. Have you had a flying prototype yet?
Yeah, we have a few. We have a 12-incher, a 3-footer, a 4-footer. We've flown crickets and bugs and small circuits with sensors and whatnot. And so our first product is actually a drone product that allows one to watch the bears, because you'll see that the bears in the Antarctic end of the world continents are dying. They found out one reason is because the tourist helicopters are giving them heart attacks. So if you want to monitor animals or watch for forest fires, this small craft you can keep in a big suitcase in the back of the ranger's pickup truck is a great device. Also for monitoring power lines, which is our next largest area of interest from potential customers, and of course border patrol, and things where you need to keep an eye on animals or regions without something crashing or causing a lot of noise or causing a lot of disturbance.
All right. If you've built a drone, you must have somewhat of an idea in mind of how this will be implemented in a craft that could lift a human. What will this thing look like? What will be required? Will it require large surfaces in order to, capacitive surfaces in order to create these ion flows?
Our designs currently, and the ones that can be seen are patent, involve a donut type effect that is worn above or below or adjacent to the user. And the designs and engineering predict something about the size of a Volkswagen, actually with a cable on it that you can lock to a parking meter. So it appears that if we scale up using simulation technology and computer analysis, that we can get the thrust for an individual with a configuration that's about the size of a small to mid-sized car.
One of the problems with a lot of propulsive technologies is generating enough power.
Mm-hmm.
And you identify this in your press release, that there has been a problem in the past with heavy power supplies to, you know, create. Obviously, you have to have a storage medium for energy, which in the electrical world could either be some sort of fossil fuel generator or a battery. And that right away triggers in people's mind weight. You have to find some other novel way to solve it. You seem to have done it with something that reminds me, frankly, of the early work of Tesla.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You're talking about having a power supply that's based on the ground and broadcasting power either in a direct or a peer-to-peer mode. Explain, if you can, without giving away your technology, how in the world this would work.
Well, actually, we have given away our technology in the patent. In order to get a patent, you have to tell everybody how to do it. So we don't have to be quite as stealth about those aspects. We're under NDA with some of the major aerospace companies, and we have other patents coming out. So we can't tell you about some even neater component fixes that we've come up with, but a lot of the basics are all laid out, so we don't have to be too spooky about that. So the technology, the first generation and second generation solutions or attempts at solutions found out that the whole thing weighed too much. And in the old days, when you didn't have a lot of assembly-specific integrated circuits and you couldn't run down to the wafer fab and have them knock something out for you, the systems are really heavy. And if you look at the movies on YouTube, you see these very arcane, old pieces of equipment that are being used to create the first prototypes. So we just took the power plant off the craft, and we discovered that there is a technology called a rectifying antenna, which could be a long cord that hangs down below the craft or sticks up above it. It's just a little tiny wire. And you can put different types of subcomponents on that. And there's a technology called a Schottky diode, which is very helpful in this. And, in fact, people have built full-size broadcast power aircraft. You just don't see them too much because they've been in sort of black bag projects and stealth projects, but there's movies of those on the internet now too. So I don't think I'm blowing anybody's cover by talking about that. Mm-hmm. So you aim a terahertz sound wave or a laser or focused sub-millimeter waves, and it broadcasts power. One proof of this is a technology you can see, I think it's Raytheon's online, which is a crowd dispersion technology, which looks like a big dish antenna on top of a Jeep or Humvee, and you aim it at people and they think they're getting hot, and it creates a sensation of heat and the crowd breaks up and runs away. Well, they're just broadcasting power through that, and it shows that it works. The Rectenna, if you type Rectenna into Google, you'll see the description of how that works. So it's not a science fiction technology. It's relatively known technology, but there hasn't been a lot of call for it because we have wires all over the place doing things, although the world now is becoming a little more conscious of wireless because you hear Wi-Fi every place and everybody's got a cell phone. So we're finding that the more you get rid of the wires, the happier people are. So we just did that on this technology, and we found that a fuel cell powered generator can run the whole small unmanned unit. So we believe in scale up and efficiency. It could do that with the big unit. And then if it's line of sight power, we developed a way that one craft can relay energy stream or laser or sound frequency to another craft. And then we said, well, what if it's behind a mountain or running around buildings, if it's doing emergency line delivery for a fire on top of a skyscraper? And we developed a technology that already existed, and we made better, called a decay battery, and we created something called a repercussive decay battery. And a decay battery is a little tiny, novel, new battery system that can last for 10 or 15 years. And the first ones are probably going to be put into pacemakers inside people's bodies because they really don't want people with pacemakers don't like the idea of you carving their chest out to change the battery. So,
right.
The decay battery is a technology that you'll actually see patents by the watch companies, wristwatch companies, and then they realized, ooh, if your wristwatch never ran down, you wouldn't buy a new one. So none of them really exploited them. And one of the problems with decay batteries is they output, in many cases, high voltage. Well, we like high voltage, so it's good for what we're doing. Some people, the next obvious question would be, well, you're beaming energy at people, isn't that bad? We have another set of patents filed and about to come out on energy protective shielding that's not lead-based because, of course, lead is heavy and toxic. So we addressed a number of biological dynamics as well as energy efficiency dynamics.
Let me ask you about the problem that the world had with Tesla's work in terms of distributing electrical power with it, and that is Well, there were a couple of them. First, Tesla was using orders of magnitude lower frequencies than you're talking about. He was using stuff that would, well, just to put it in a term people could understand, would lie at frequencies below the bottom of the AM broadcast band.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially, his technology would have prevented the existence of radio and TV as we know it from developing just because of the massive interference. Your system would not have that issue. But the other big issue with Tesla's work was, if you distribute it through the air, how do you get people to pay for it? How do you meter it? In your case, I guess if it has to be beamed, which at those frequencies it would, who is on the ground doing this, or is that automated?
It's automated. For the Rangers, there's two boxes. There's one's a little mast that comes up or flips up and hooks on the back corner of the pickup truck bed. And in a city, if there are cities that authorize this and the FAA gives you your license, you just, you know, it's like cell phone towers. And we may be able to use cell phone towers and add a device at the top. Our stuff is much more directional. So cell phone towers and microwaves actually have a lot of drop-off and runs around the environment. We're super directional, and we need to be. We use forward-looking infrared and other types of aiming technologies that keep us very focused. So three towers can cover San Francisco and New York. You just put them up on the highest buildings, and it's targeted. So the module's aiming at your unit, and your part of our technology also uses what's something called highway in the sky technology, which is now beginning to get standardized protocols. And what we did is just extend the entire GPS array 2,000 feet up in the air. So there's already usable databases, and the FAA already has standards for highway in the sky. And in our system, if you get off track, if you get 2 feet off your track, you lose power and start to glide back down to the ground. The system cuts you off. So you have to have a special card if you're a policeman or emergency services or paramedic person to fly off the, what we call off the G-grid.
Mm-hmm. If a number of people decided to start using this technology, would there be the means to distribute enough power to keep them all in the air?
Yes, it's pretty efficient, and then the decay batteries cover you beyond that, and you basically set up an up-in-the-air power grid. You can, you know, do what Tesla was hoping to do, but in a more benign, focused, distributed way, and you set it up on the GPS quarters, so it's not, you don't need to have it flying all over the place.
So, in other words, I guess if I understand you, if you got enough people in the air that you had momentary demands that were beyond the broadcast system, you could actually borrow power from other users.
Right, right. When the more people there are, the better it works. So, assuming, I'm trying to think of a movie where you might have seen something like that. Well, just the last Star Wars movie or the that Bruce Willis movie about the future, where all the vehicles had to stay in the air, but they stayed in tracks. It looked like freeway traffic lanes, but floating in the air. The FAA is not going to let anything happen unless everybody's on a very, very coordinated trajectory, minutely coordinated. So it'll ramp up slowly. There'll be hearings, but the first people who are going to get these are going to be emergency services people, certainly.
You know, this may sound flip, but it's not meant to be. But I remember the Jetsons as a kid. When I watched that cartoon series on TV, I thought, they're flying through the air. How come they still need to be on roads?
Right.
But this kind of explains that.
Well, it's liability. The FAA has a liability responsibility to the public, and they're gonna follow through on that. People, the world's always wanted to fly. We all saw Peter Pan. We had the dream embedded. As a matter of fact, when Microsoft was first going to launch XP, their first promotion was "You can fly." Remember, all the people were walking down the street and they started flying around their campuses, universities, and
right.
They cut that off because of 9/11. But they picked that because they did a global study of humans' biggest, greatest dream that they could tie to the product. And this very expensive marketing study said what people want most is that they want to fly. So it's always been a dream of people, but when you have a dream, and many people have a dream, you have to compensate a little bit with a shared consensus. There's, stoplights at the corners of our streets, and we abide by those stoplights, even though there aren't people there. So the same will apply to any volume use of this type of technology in the social and urban dynamics.
My guest today is Scott Redmond of Personal Flight Systems. We're talking about human electronic flight, and we'll be back to talk about it more in a moment. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 G2. Interested in a substantial airplane that remains practical and affordable? Whether you're a non-pilot looking to begin flying lessons, a pilot needing personal transportation, or a fleet customer selecting the best plane to meet the demands of a multiple aircraft operation, consider the SR20 G2. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Okay, you got the license and now you're renting or even own a plane. Now what? Hi, I'm Tom Gresham, host of Wings to Adventure Television, and every week on the Outdoor Channel, we show you incredible places you can visit in your plane. Shot in spectacular high definition, Wings to Adventure captures cool planes, interesting people, and fly-in getaways you haven't heard of. Plus, we always have fun. There's more info at wingstoadventure.com.
Welcome back to this Aero News special feature. I'm Paul Platt. My guest today is Scott Redmond, recently awarded a patent for something called human electronic flight. Scott, now that we've talked a bit about what this is, let's talk about how this form of flight would differ from the types of aircraft people are familiar with at this point. How noisy is this?
It's completely silent. The little ones that we fly right now, sometimes we have to create support technologies just to tell if they're about to take off. So it's completely quiet. It's a silent craft. It takes off vertical. It's VTOL. In our design, you could probably have them take off at an angle. And this technology can be combined with propellers and balloons and rockets to accomplish different types of things. If you're going through a cave, trying to find lost cavers, or all the different things you could use something like this for. You might combine some other lift and propulsion technologies with it.
All right, let's talk about expense, because I think once you make the translation from very small drones up into something that can lift human beings, mm-hmm. You're probably talking a lot more of everything. How much will this weigh? And how much will it cost?
Well, our drone system right now, we have a preliminary spec sheet. We're competing against other UAVs, as they're called, or drones. And we're able to predict price efficiencies that are 50% lower than other people's systems after the initial investment. And the initial investment involves a remote control pack with a joystick and monitoring gear, computer. So the pack is more expensive than other people's drones, but it does more. And then in operation and continuous use, it's less expensive. So competitively, let's say relative to helicopter, we have less noise, less moving parts. So helicopters and aircraft are constantly trying to shake themselves apart. This device doesn't do that. It's basically a very spidery exoskeleton with the gear on it. It can fly inside of structures. Helicopters can't do that easily. There's no moving parts. You're not going to cut your finger off on it or get your face burned off in a back blast. We have unlimited flight time. As long as there's ground power and the decay battery's working, it doesn't come down. It just, you're up there permanently if you want to just live in the air. Mm-hmm. We haven't designed the house in the sky, but suppose someone could extrapolate that. You can stand next to it. There's not severe danger. The maintenance requires are minimal. The requirements are minimal. You don't need to land for fuel. It's easy to scale it up and down. You don't need a propeller for primary lift. You don't need extensive training. You need 4 hours of training to fly the drone or the big one, because there's we propose that the big ones, the human-mounted systems, are locked into the GPS, the G-grid, and that you're not allowed to fly outside it if you're a regular user. Mm-hmm. The technology won't let you vary and will slow you down and stop you if you're coming up to a quote-unquote intersection.
Let me ask you, if someone was more interested in this, could they find video on the web? You mentioned the YouTube video of Generation 1. Do you have any video available, or can we link people to video where they could see this technology actually work?
We're posting video at personalflightsystems.com. You got to be very careful on YouTube. The only video that I know that's on there that's validated is the 40s and 50s movies of this fella Brown flying these in a lab, and it appears to be they're flying them in a vacuum, which his, that's actually the greatest controversy is not that secret government film is on YouTube. It's that secret government film of somebody flying them in a vacuum, which isn't supposed to be possible, is there. And since nobody's thrown one of these into a space shuttle, nobody's really confirmed if it works in a vacuum or not. And there's a company in England called M-Drive who's doing a technology, and they're at, I think, emdrive.com. They've been funded by the government of England to do space propulsion systems using not same technology, but a tangential technology. We have another generation of technology which we think will work in space. But we're adding some things to it that will make it work relative to what the reason is that people think it won't work. But the controversy in the Brown movies, as they're called on YouTube, is they have the thing flying at what appears to be a glass vacuum chamber. So that makes it extra interesting. But you got to be very careful on YouTube because there's a lot of other things shown in movies flying around, and most all of them turn out to be computer graphics. And today, with Maya software and 3D Studio Max, you can do photo-perfect computer graphics that nobody can tell isn't real. So unless you stood in front of it or saw it on the NBC News at night or, you know, something mainstream, question it. Question us, you know, until we have this out at a trade show. You know, there's a whole lot of people that want to relate this to edgy things that we don't talk about, but this is Earth-based. It was developed using normal science, but science that's been relatively ignored because there wasn't a reason to pay attention to it. But it's ions banging into each other and being modified by technologies that cause them to do things more efficiently that they didn't do before. So it's not extraterrestrial science, I guarantee you.
Okay, now the next step would appear for your company, Scott, to be demonstrating this. You make mention of the fact that you want to do additional prototyping and find out ways to optimize the technology. Let me ask you the hard question. How much money are you trying to raise?
Right now we're raising $500,000 to partner with some other aviation firms and some universities to build a big, actually fourth-generation technology system. And then after that, we're doing a consortium approach, because the trick with this is you need to use manufacturing technologies that didn't exist until just recently, thin film technologies and massive wafer arrays and things like that that have a very expensive setup cost. Once you've done the setup, somebody like Sony or Toyota or somebody could actually stamp these out. But the setup cost is really, really expensive. Imagine setting up for the new fuel cell cars that they're getting ready to produce. It's a really expensive process. But once you've done that, the price rapidly drops. So next fundraising activities are a consortium effort to do a very large drone that can actually relay materials. It actually takes something like an emergency pack to somebody that's injured, and to continually increase the payload, because the humans get on them when the payload is you know, at 150 pounds plus. We're at a pound or two right now, so the science and the simulations say you can get there, and it'll take this much time without any resources, and for each 10% additional resources, the time span to get people on the things reduces incrementally. So it's really just resource-based. There's not a how do you do it, there's how do you fine-tune it, and there's optimization activities that are required. But it's not can we, it's more how soon can we.
Your website is called personalflightsystems.com?
Yes.
How soon should we look for video there?
I'll tell the boys to go start making some now.
This sounds fascinating, Scott, and I'm going to have to get used to not checking the oil or watching for stall speed, but it sounds like this is going to be a revolutionary thing, and we wish you the best of luck and stay in touch.
All right, thank you very much.
You can find out more about Scott Redmond's company at personalflightsystems.com. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. On the web, you'll find us at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.